was a woods was about, I don't know, I'm bad at this, 40 feet of woods, I mm-hmm. think. And so we used to camp out there and collect golf balls that came into the yard, and the boys just had a, they just had a wonderful time. And we had, you used to burn things in big bins. Do you remember that?
Well, I remember the 55-gallon drums that we'd use, yeah.
Right, right. And people would put their leaves and whatever and just burn them right there. And I remember, I'll never forget this, I remember one of the boys, Bill, had actually reached in to grab something and burned both his hands.
Oh.
Yeah, and so he had to be all wrapped up, and it was frightening.
I bet he never did that again.
it was a consequence he's never forgotten.
Now, when the boys growing up being identical twins, I'm sure they got a lot of attention from family and neighbors and all that. When did you learn how to tell them apart, and how did that happen?
Yeah, I could always tell them apart. And I think just from the time they were born, Billy was always smaller a little bit, but, you know, within a month or two, he wasn't. They're just subtle differences that you can tell. Just from being around them all the time.
Did they ever do the favorite trick and pretend to be Bill when it was really Russ?
They did with us.
Really? What did they do?
I don't know if they ever did it out in the world, but they certainly did it with us. They thought that was really funny.
Yeah.
I don't know that I can remember a specific thing. They would just, you know, if you called one, the other one would come just to see if you'd notice. We usually did.
Yeah, but
don't do that to me. I know you're not Rusty. Yeah.
Hey, I saw you do that. No, that was Bill.
Yeah,
no,
right.
It
right.
was you. No, it was Bill. Well, who are you? I'm Bill. A lot of fun.
Yep.
What about Mom's stay-at-home mom? Mm-hmm. Did she was she a good cook?
Yeah, although she didn't really like to cook, she really distinguished herself musically. She played around the town and everywhere. And ironically, when I married Doug, she and Doug's father, who was a lawyer in town, they frequently had played together since before I was born. They'd played at churches and around town and at different events.
Well, what did she play?
She was a violinist and a pianist.
Okay.
And he was a pianist, and they both had beautiful voices.
Was your dad in any organizations as a principal?
Oh, yeah, he was in lots of them. His three strongest volunteers, especially later as he moved towards retirement, was Kiwanis Club and American Cancer Society and mental health initiatives.
Okay. We don't have a Kiwanis Club in this town.
I didn't think we did, no. So I joined Rotary, which is great.
And Rotary, when I came to town, the Lions were the big deal.
Yeah, they're here too, yeah.
And when I was president, we had over 100 members.
Really?
Yeah, and the JC organization was probably the strongest organization in town. Now it's not here. And the Rotary now is the one that seems to be the leader in regards to membership.
Mm-hmm. So, I think so, yeah.
But a lot of clubs
in
this town.
It's a great club.
Yeah. So they were very involved over the weekend, too, with all those runs and bicycle races and fun things. I helped them one year bring food to stations on my motorcycle.
Really?
Yeah. Drive up.
I'm just, as we were talking earlier, I'm so amazed at how many jobs there are to do and what an enormous undertaking it is, and it gets bigger every year. It's just, we moved here in 1986, and it was almost all done down in Riverside Park and up here, but it's just gotten bigger and bigger every year.
Oh, yeah. If you coast, you don't grow.
That's right.
You got to keep going. At 5 minutes after 10 o'clock, I warn you that Barb Warrenson is my guest this morning. Now, you say you got here in 1986, but what I want to do is chronicle your high school years.
Oh.
And you were following your sister, Linda. Mm-hmm. Now, did she, like, set the pace, or was she, like, real popular, or was she very academically successful or sports? Yeah. Or
mostly academically successful, and yeah, she was fairly popular. The big thing at that time was it was so different then. I'm so glad it's changed. She graduated in 1962, and I graduated 3 years later, and those 3 years made all the difference. If you think back, she was involved in the civil rights movement, and she wanted, when she went to college, I remember she, that was a big deal. She wanted to be a freedom writer and go down, and my father said, absolutely not, and she played with the idea of just doing it anyway, but she didn't, and I was younger, but thought, oh, let her go, she should do this. But, oh my gosh, then all these horrible things happened, and it was quite a time to grow up. By the time I was graduating from high school, things were starting to change. And within a few years, while I was in college, of course, there was the strike and the Vietnam protests, and everything became more intense. So we have a little different memory of those times. I can remember sitting in my, another moment that we all remember where we were, sitting in my geometry class and hearing my father, who was the principal, come over the intercom and say that President Kennedy had been assassinated. And it was just such a forced entry into adulthood. I just said,
yeah, you were like a sophomore when that happened. Yeah. I generally will ask people where they were when that in 9/11 happened, and what did you do, or what, how did it work out? Because I remember it vividly, hearing it on a car radio. I had been hitchhiking to my job from school, and I just was dumbfounded.
Just dumbfounded. Yeah. It just couldn't be true. Something's wrong. It cannot be true. But
so,
it was.
So anyhow, when Linda didn't go on the Freedom March, what college did she attend?
She attended Morningside in Sioux City, Iowa.
Okay.
So a Methodist college at the time. It's a good school.
And she went off and became a what?
She went to graduate school. She finished with a doctorate in English, which...
Wow.
But she taught at George Mason University, and for many years. She's retired now.
Okay.
Yeah.
So now, were there expectations of you because of the success Linda had in academics?
I think so. I had, you know, decided I wanted to make a mark. So, yeah, I think so.
So you were studious also.
Yeah.
Did you get involved in any high school activities besides good grades?
I think my biggest love was music. And that was taking after my mother, really.
Mm-hmm.
And I played the piano and the French horn and really loved that and you know, hoped to have a career in music. My mother talked me out of it. I'm not sure if that was good. But I've always continued to play. I played with the CVRO here in town for many years.
Not the piano. You probably played the French horn.
Yeah. French horn and the cello. I took up the cello as an adult, but just to see if I could do it.
Mm-hmm.
I could do it, but...
as a young man, when we were maybe even a little boy, when we were learning the instruments, and I was thinking, well, who cares?
Yes.
And I'm glad I did pay attention and could knew the difference between a saxophone and a flute, you know. But the one that I was impressed with was the French horn.
A lot of people say that. Yeah.
And I think it's the way it's built, the physical appearance of it, and the fact that it says French horn.
Yes,
I got a little
right.
French in me. And the sound is so just all by itself mellow.
Yeah, that's why I fell in love with it. Yeah,
and it's almost a big tuba.
Well, you know, at that time, the Music Man had just come out in '62, I think, when I was in ninth grade.
That one?
With Robert Preston and 76 trombones and all of that. So they premiered that in
Mason City.
So it was based on Meredith Willson growing up in Mason City. and they premiered it there. And Mason City has always had a band festival day, which you saw in the movie at the very end. And all the small school bands, they still do it today. I haven't been back for a long time. And they march down the streets in the parade, and then at the night there's a football game, and everybody gathers in the, and they crown the homecoming queen and all of this good stuff. And they put together, and at the time I was too young, but my friend was the drum major, and then later I was the drum major. So
really?
She got to, yeah.
You're the drum major?
Yeah.
Oh, man, I was announcing the parade on Sunday,
uh-huh.
And every time I see a drum major, I say, I would love to do that. I would love to do that.
It was great.
And boy,
fun.
Did they ever, some of these bands that went through Sunday, they had drum majors that they made moves.
I mean, oh, yeah. They're just amazing.
Yeah,
they're
I like the standard one with the beat, you know. And
that's
what
me.
Do you call that, a baton?
Yep.
Okay.
Just
and
a baton.
I like the big hi-hats,
yeah.
And the strap on a chin. And so you got to do that.
I got to do that. I loved football games, which I never really got into football. But I loved leading the band onto the field,
yeah.
Before and afterwards, and that was a big thrill.
Are you a drum and bugle corps person?
No, we didn't. I like them, but yeah. I never participated in that, no. But I think they're a great opportunity.
So in high school, you got good grades. You got to be the drum major.
Yeah.
How did that end up that you were the drum major?
Oh, funny you should ask. So we had to audition with the director of the bands. But we had two directors, and... And then we had to write on a card why we wanted to do this. Well, at the time, they didn't put French horns in the marching band because they're really hard to hold on to and keep on your lips.
Yeah.
So they made us play trumpets, and I hated playing a trumpet. So I wrote, I want to be a drum major because I hate playing the trumpet. And
okay.
I got the job. Well. I think I got it more likely because I was tall and it was... very close match to the other drum major who was a year ahead of me.
What?
So we looked good together.
Do you have a real job when you're doing that, or are you a show? Are the instrumentalists looking at you and counting on you for counting?
Yeah, you're kind of directing it.
Okay.
With the beat.
Yeah.
I mean, I was just doing the beat, like you
okay.
said. But. And
did you have a whistle?
You had a whistle, you stopped them, and
yeah.
you pointed where they were supposed to go. They already knew where they were supposed to go.
What was the hottest day you remember?
Oh, my gosh. And those uniforms were wool, and those big hats, yeah. Yeah, just band festival day, which was usually late June, early July, and it was just so hot. I don't know how hot it was. Must have been 120.
Okay.
Inside my wool suit, I think.
Did you ever get to flirt with any of the football jocks?
Tried. I think they're more interested in the cheerleaders.
Yeah, okay. It's 10:15 on the Wayne Eddy Affair. My guest this morning is Barb Warnson. She is the principal and the superintendent of the Arcadia School here in Northfield, just south. And we'll be back with more on her life right after this important timeout.
Millstream Commons Assisted Living is where the all-star seniors enjoy life in Northfield. From the delicious meals, the bright, spacious apartments, the volunteer projects, the bus trips we take, classes we attend, and the music we enjoy, there's something for everyone. At Millstream Commons, we treat everyone like an MVP. For more information, call 507-650-0141.
Residential or commercial, Cannon Valley Water in Dundas is the place to call for water. Whether it's a complete water conditioning system or just salt delivery and filters, Cannon Valley Water can take care of it. And Cannon Valley Water can also deliver Candy Yohai premium water right to your house or business at great rates, too. Chippewa Springs is as pure today as it was when we first tested it over a century ago, and is proudly distributed by Cannon Valley Water. Pickups are now located at 609 Stafford Lane in Dundas, just behind Aldi. Call Cannon Valley for your water today.
Big hit, 1965.
Yep. I got you, babes. This is Sonny and Cher.
You got it.
I got it.
All right.
Finally.
I figured you'd get this one. Do you do karaoke?
I don't. Okay. It'd be kind of fun.
Yeah. Now, did you go to the prom when you were in high school?
Oh, yes.
How many
that
times?
That was big. I didn't go my senior year, believe it or not, but I went the other 3 years.
The
other 2 years, not as a freshman, no.
Usually they only allow juniors and seniors. But
right, but as a date, you can go as a sophomore.
That's right.
You could back then.
So what kind of dress did you wear?
My goodness, I can't read that. One year, the song Blue Velvet came out. I remember
she
that.
She wore blue velvet. Yeah.
And we all wore blue velvet to the prom.
Okay, isn't that cute?
It was cute. It was a little warm.
Yeah. No, at that
we were styling.
Were you in the era where women can ask a man to a prom?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope. It was too early for that.
Yeah. I was from that era where, you know.
There was etiquette.
I did get asked someone, and I went, wow, I didn't really, somebody asked a guy. So that was, Blue Velvet was one of them. What was the other dress that you remember?
Oh, gosh. I remember a white one that I liked.
Mm-hmm.
Just a white cotton sundress.
You remember who you went with?
No. Who did I go with? I went with, one year I went with a baritone player from band.
Okay.
I remember people by what instrument they played in the band. That's how band, how musically bound I was. And then I went with a drummer.
All right.
Another one.
Had a lot of fun.
You're not going to ask me their names, I hope, because I can't remember that.
I'm not going to ask you their names. I'm just bringing back memories.
Yeah.
Now, for example, a bicycle. When did you get your own bicycle?
I was probably 6 or 7 when I got my own bicycle.
What color was it?
Blue. It was blue. I do remember that bicycle.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And this is what I do, is just kind of trip down memory lane. So Linda, of course, set an example, went off to school, and now it's your turn, and you have to choose where you go. You were paying attention in class, so I assume that you could apply at several colleges and get accepted.
It was a tough decision for me. I was given a scholarship to Walter Reed. It was a Walter Reed Army Institute of Nursing scholarship, which was a really big deal. And I've been told by people who went into nursing. And you could choose any school, and they paid room, board, and tuition, and then you were inducted into the Army as a private. Remember, we're just getting involved in Vietnam.
Yeah.
This is 65.
Yeah.
So I got that scholarship, although I wasn't the one who wanted to go into nursing. It was my mother who really wanted me to go into nursing. I think my mother had the grand plan of that way I would marry a doctor. Remember, this is a whole different era.
Isn't that something?
Isn't that something? My life would be set. She had it all figured out. Go into nursing, and then... And so you could apply anywhere, but if you didn't get the scholarship, then you had to pay for it yourself. So I was encouraged to apply at sensible state colleges, just in case I didn't get the scholarship. And you had to be accepted to one before they would come. So I went to the University of Iowa, long story short.
And on a band scholarship?
No, I got the nursing scholarship.
Oh, okay.
So it was on a nursing scholarship. Classes were very, more like pre-med. I mean, they had a plan for us. And I didn't want to be a nurse. I found out rather quickly, but I was in the Army. So finally...
You joined the Army?
Yeah, that's what you had to do.
You committed, okay.
Mm-hmm. You committed. You joined. I was a private, and so I had to really work to get out of that. You couldn't just say, well, I'm going to change my major. You have to get out of the Army somehow. They had invested a lot in us. They didn't want us to be doing that. So... I investigated it a little, and there were two ways you could get out. One was to get pregnant. Back in the day.
Hey, you. Ooh, come on over here.
I thought, no, I'm not going to do that. And one was to flunk, to fail. I set out to fail. This is true, Wayne. I stopped going to classes, and I still got a grade in those classes because they were huge classes. They'd be like 300 kids. And they would give me a passing grade. And I thought, no, I don't want a passing grade. How could you do this? So finally, I wrote a letter my sophomore year to the Army saying, you know, you don't want me in this program. I can't imagine why you're doing this. I'm trying to flunk out. That's how badly I don't want to be in this program. And they sent me an honorable discharge. So I got out. Better for all of us.
Did you have, how big was your class in class of 65 in Mason City?
I think it was about 700.
Wow.
Yeah, it was big.
Now, were you becoming aware of some of those classmates being drafted and sent off to Vietnam?
Yeah, once I was in college, that started happening, and bad things started. I mean, so when I went in 65, we were still trying to rush and do sorority rushes, and we to practice, the girls from the sororities would come over to the dorms. We went early and stayed in the dorms so we could do sorority rush. And they taught us how to hold a cigarette and how to accept a cigarette. Basically, they taught me how to smoke, which was a disaster. I've quit now, but it wasn't easy, and I just look back at that time and think, we were crazy. It was so important to get into a sorority. That was everything. And within 2 years, everybody was de-pledging, getting out of the sororities. It's a terrible institution, and let's get out of Vietnam, and let's get out of everything that smacks of establishment. Everything changed. It was a great time to be.
And how did you handle all that?
I depledged.
Okay.
I continued to smoke.
So did you get involved at all in any demonstrations?
Yeah, I did. I remember the University of Iowa campus has five big buildings called the Pentacrest, and they define a space that's like a big quadrangle, right in the middle of town. University of Iowa is very much a city location. It's right in the town. And What we did was we would demonstrate in that quadrangle. And I can remember a couple times that got scary when the SWAT team would come. They looked like SWAT team, and they would fill the spaces between those five buildings so there was no escape. And they stood there, and they were giants, and they had their helmets and their sunglasses and their billy sticks, and those sticks are huge. They're like baseball bat size. And then they just started walking in. And then at the last minute, they let us go. But it was really scary.
When they started walking in, what did you do?
You know, I remember I got out, but I'm not sure how. I think what I recall is that they were allowing people to leave between ranks. That's what their real job was to clear us out. So they wanted us to leave, and that's how we got out. I can remember the night that we heard about the bombing in Cambodia and the Nixon having kept the war going longer. I can't remember exactly what had happened, but I remember being in my apartment, which was above a garage close to town, and hearing the windows break downtown and people...
In Mason City?
No, this is in Iowa City.
Oh, Iowa City.
This is in Iowa City now.
Okay.
So... It was an interesting time to be alive.
What about, we have in 1968, we have Robert Kennedy and Martin mm-hmm. Luther King.
Mm-hmm.
Do you recall those situations?
I do.
All the horrible things that were going on?
It was such a frightening time. And Kent State was right around in
yes.
there, too, where the police had killed some demonstrators. I remember having argued with a friend about Robert Kennedy, and I was an avid supporter of him. I don't know what I would have said, but what she said when I walked into the bar where we hung out all the time, she said, "I suppose you're happy now." And it just offended me. I said, "How could you say that? What are you talking
happy
about?"
Happy that Bobby Kennedy was shot?
Yeah, she was just...
Why would she think you'd be happy?
I don't know where she got that, but I've always... I mean, it was... I don't think I ever spent any time with her again. But
no. Wow.
I was not happy. I was devastated.
Yeah.
It felt like something was crazy. Something crazy going on.
And hopefully none of that's going to happen in the next year or two or five or whatever. 27 minutes after 10 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair, my guest this morning is Barb Warnson, and she's the principal and superintendent of Arcadia School on Northfield South Side. So what did you end up majoring in, since your mother didn't want to? You know, was disappointed that you checked out on nursing.
She died at age 99 not that long ago, and I think she was still disappointed.
Yeah, that's something.
I had it all planned for you.
What did you major in?
I majored in psychology for my BA, and then I went into special education, learning disabilities, and
did they have a program psychology BS?
Yes. A BS in psychology, you bet. You know, it occurred during my first year in college. One of my twin brothers passed away.
What happened?
He was 13 and he had a brain tumor.
Oh.
And he was diagnosed when he was 5. So a lot of my growing up was Billy dying.
Was your folks take it pretty hard?
We all took it very hard. It was a very hard, especially the surviving brother. He lived a pretty good life. I mean, he'd had surgery and what they did, cobalt treatments. I think they still do those. It was an astrocytoma. It just kept spreading, and you didn't know what would be knocked out when, and he was almost blind. And he would go to school with Rusty, and Rusty would take care of him. And then so he had special ed needs all through middle school, but we didn't have special ed really back then in the 60s. So when it recurred, he was 13 and I was in college and we came back. So that's why my interest in psychology and special education, I really have always had a place in my heart, especially knowing that Rusty got into a few fights defending Bill from taunts and bullying and
that
kind of thing.
That's obviously very hard on the twin.
Yeah, yeah.
And was it hopefully a quick thing, or was it years of trying?
No, it was years of trying from the age of 5 to 13, so it was 8 years. And the doctors had said if he can survive for 8 years, he should be fine. And he had just tunnel vision in one eye. The other eye was completely gone. That was the big thing. He had trouble reading, obviously, for that reason. And he had some learning disabilities. Yeah. But then when it came back, then it was fairly quick after that.
Well, I'm sorry.
And, yeah, thank you.
a little moment of silence in honor of Bill. Mm-hmm. When you started majoring in psychology,
mm-hmm.
and what was the other one?
And special education.
Special ed, okay. And like you say, that was relatively new field, special ed at that
mm-hmm,
time.
Right.
And were there a lot of big, was that a big class where professors sat in a well?
No.
How did that work?
No, that would have been graduate school, and it was smaller classes. That was good. It was at around that time that the law was passed, 94-142, which is the law that requires schools to provide an education to students with special needs. And that was brought about by a couple, I think in Texas, I'm pretty sure that's right, who had a handicapped child and felt that they shouldn't have to pay to have a private education in these very expensive institutions when the public school just said we can't deal with them. So they sued, they got what they needed, and this law was passed, and special ed was born. And when I started out, it would have been the early 70s as a special ed teacher, which I was for 2 years, and then I went back to do graduate work in psychology again, and eventually went to the University of Kansas as a PhD student working in school psychology. That was my goal, and did that for a few years. I was very much trained in the behaviorist position, so that means that we believed, like B.F. Skinner, that everything happens because you're operating on the environment. So if you're crying, sorry. If you're crying, it's actually operant behavior. You're trying to make the other person feel sorry for you, that kind of thing. I swallowed it hook, line, and sinker, and then at a certain point, one of my professors at the University of Kansas, this is KU, said, you need to go, before I let you graduate, you need to go to the Menninger Foundation, which is a neuropsychiatric foundation or hospital in Topeka, which was not that far from Lawrence, where I was in school, and see a different approach. They were very psychoanalytic. Carl Menninger was there, and they believed in all of Freud's. So psychoanalysis was still very big at that time in the 70s. But it was changing. So I went to the Menninger Foundation, and I started as an intern and ended up taking a job there. And still worked on my doctorate, but I loved the humanity of it. I loved how the grounds were so beautiful, and part of the whole system was to create this nurturing environment for the kids. So I worked as a school psychologist there for about 11 years.
Wow.
Yeah. And
I assume you got your doctorate degree?
Well, actually... Actually, no. During that time, I got married and got pregnant and thought I would write my dissertation while I was on maternity leave, and that was a big joke. That never happened, yeah. Of course. So I didn't until I came up here.
Okay.
So in 1986, then we moved up here, and I did finish my doctorate at St. Thomas.
So I can call you doctor.
Yes, you can.
Did you spend any time in the Shaughnessy Library?
Yes.
My uncle was the first librarian there.
Oh, really? Yeah. It's a beautiful place.
Yeah.
That's
a long time ago. And I helped bring the books from the old library into the new one.
Oh.
Carried them on a board, following the kid in front of me, and I could not get out of order because we were replacing them.
Oh, they had to be in order,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's when they had...
Dewey Decimal.
Yeah, Dewey Decimal. It's 10:33 on 1080 Radio, KYMN, out of Northfield. So during that time when this Texas couple was able to get the attention of the state and federal people in regards mm-hmm. to education, one of the things was, well, gee whiz, this individual going to school needs to have an adult person with them all the time,
mm-hmm.
and the learning curve is pretty much stable, and not the instructions, the teachings weren't sinking in as they would somebody that didn't have the deficit, and it was just really expensive. Really
right?
expensive, and some attitudes were, why waste your money on somebody that's not going to contribute
yeah.
to society? And we have an individual right here in Northfield who was a special needs child,
mm-hmm.
and he's had jobs. And we have people from Laura Baker.
Yes.
And we have the place out in Dundas,
is that Epic?
Epic, or? Yeah, uh-huh. Epic. So uh-huh. you were catching on to that way back in the 60s,
right,
early
right.
70s?
Oh, absolutely. And when that was happening, I was still in training. And I, when I taught at Cedar Falls in a school, and we had a special ed what they called multi-disability classes. So we didn't separate anybody out. We just put everybody together. And if the teacher down the road could drop by any time and say, here's Bradley, he's not reading right, so he should come to you for reading, and just drop the kid off and leave. And I had to deal with it. It was kind of like the Wild West. And I had a child who had severe respiratory problems, so he came with oxygen. I had a child in a wheelchair, and it was a great experience for me. I hope I helped the kids.
How about that kid that got dropped off in that classroom and had to have the ignominy of that following him through school?
Right, right.
When all he needed was some help to read.
Yeah, yeah. He should have had that. Now, I would say, that should have happened for him in the regular classroom. You don't have to be a special ed student to get some help with reading. I mean, that shouldn't have been a problem. But that's how they handled it then. And it was for those reasons that I decided to go back to graduate school in school psychology and learn how to differentiate and what we could do, how we could handle this better. You know, you want to get as many kids as you can in the regular classroom learning. That's your goal. And if you can, what we do at Arcadia is it's called a push-in model as opposed to a pull-out. So instead of pulling kids out like that poor little boy and saying, you have to come here for reading while everybody else is doing reading in class, you have to go in that little corner and read with me. You know, if that needs to happen, that happens. But if there's any way we can keep them in the classroom, even have a para working with them to help them with that homework, that's what we want to do, that inclusivity.
Do you have a lot of students of special needs?
We do. They are... I think that there are a number of students whose parents bring them here because they're not happy with the size of the school or the child's disability doesn't fit in that environment. So a child who's really sensitive to noises, ADD, like you say, those kids may do better with us because we have such small class sizes and we have the paras and the staffing to support them in that way. And that's obviously very important to me.
Does the state give you a little extra on your budget when you have a student like that and you have to pay the assistant that?
Yes. Yes, they do. So the federal government pays and the state government pays a total of about 90% or 95% of the cost.
Do you fear that you'll be getting more and more students that require that extra attention and will not be a school that somebody with no disabilities would want to go to because of...
You would think that I would be worried about that. I'm not as worried. There are people who are worried about that. I don't see that as a problem. The kids who come and do well are the kids who have disabilities that this works for them. And they're doing better. They're doing great. They're participating in dance classes and theater classes and African drumming because they can, and they didn't have that option in a larger school because of their disability. So we're also getting a lot of kids, and this is also something we work with now, who are quite gifted. And so our question is, how do we balance that? How do we provide for these very gifted kids and still provide, you know, the support for the ones who need that support while providing challenges for the one who need challenges and support them into moving on and doing ever greater things? So that's I think one of the unique things about charter schools is that you have that's your focus, is supporting all students in a small... it's a challenge.
Empathy meter higher about the young people that go to your school that do not have any problems, physical or mental, but they seem to be more mature in regards to being...
Yes, I think so. I was going to say, I think that's true. We use a system called developmental designs, and that goes back to Linda Crawford, who was a Northfielder, who is now up in the cities. She was the first director, I think, or one of the first directors of Prairie Creek. And she has developed a huge, wonderful curriculum now called Developmental Designs that teaches social learning and social awareness and respect for each other. And it's just a marvelous curriculum that we use and more people are using. So we start the year, especially with the middle school, with these kind of, we write a social contract. So each advisory has to come up with their own social contract. And they come up with what they want on it. It may say, it almost always says respect for each other. It will say, don't take other stuff without asking first.
Yeah. Things like that. We call that stealing, don't we?
Yeah, right.
We're going to take a break here on the Wayne Eddy Affair, and we will be right back. It's 18 minutes before it's 11 o'clock on this beautiful Tuesday morning.
Because Witt Brothers Service at 701 Division Street is a Napa Auto Care Center, you get great benefits like a free 24-month or 24,000-mile nationwide warranty and great neighbor benefits that only a local, independently owned business can offer. You can always talk directly to the owners. Discover personal service at Witt Brothers, located at 701 Division Street in Northfield. Visit our newly updated website at wittbros.com and check out who we are and what we can do for you.
This is David Lutescher from the law firm of Grundhoffer & Lutescher, your hometown lawyer since 1952. We're excited to join up with your hometown radio station, Kim Radio, to bring you the Twins. The Twins win games by practicing the fundamentals of baseball. Our team at Grundhoffer & Lutescher is no different. We practice the fundamentals of listening, understanding, and giving you honest, practical, and reasonably priced advice. Your three hometown teams, the Twins, Kim Radio, and Grundhoffer & Lutescher. Go, Twins!
Hmm.
Yesterday.
Oh, this is the Beatles.
All yeah. My troubles seem so far.
And this is Yesterday.
This, of course, was number two for the entire year of 1965, the year Barb Warrenson, principal of the Arcadia School, was in high school going to two proms, one in a blue velvet dress, the other one in a white one. So, when you were in, did you say Ames, Iowa, or where's the school you're talking?
Iowa City.
Okay, Iowa City.
My goodness.
I know, I get those confused, and I apologize for that. But now, did you then get a degree in psychology? What? Okay. So, does that mean that every time you meet somebody new, you try to figure them out? Or... I often wondered about that. This person needs help. Oh, that person's got stuff going pretty good.
I think as I got more into it and in graduate school and in my doctorate, I think you do that less and less because you realize what the limitations are. It's such a brand new science, you know, as compared to other sciences.
Sure.
It's only been around since the turn of the century. Of the last century, in 1900s.
Does it help in your job today to have that
I think absolutely.
Psychology background?
Yes, absolutely. It's certainly, I have a great deal of admiration for the parents of some of the kids, well, of all the kids, having been a parent myself, but especially of parents and families who are dealing with a very difficult situation. And it's tough.
Well, after graduating from Mason City High School, 21 years later, you find yourself in Northfield, Minnesota.
Uh-huh.
And so in those years, you spent a lot of time in school.
Uh-huh.
And did you ever have a job when you were a kid in high school?
Yes, I worked. I worked in, my first job was scooping ice cream.
Oh, I've done that.
Yeah.
Soda jerk. Yeah.
Soda jerk, and then my next job was, I think, in a nursing home.
Okay.
Being a nurse's aide, and then in the summer before I went to college, I went to my father was superintendent then, and I got a job with the first Head Start program when they were first starting.
Sure.
And that was a huge eye opener for me. I lived in that city all my life and hadn't known that there were migrant workers at the sugar beet plants. That we had Mason City had a big sugar beet plant, and they used migrant workers. And this program was primarily serving them during the summer to get them ready for school. And it was tough. It was like a real whoa. How could I not have known this whole population of people were here?
When you got out of college, but you kept continuing your education, you started having children?
My first child was born in 1980.
1980. Yeah. Okay. And what's your first child's name?
John.
Okay. And then do you have more?
John. Yep. And then Nick was born in 1987. So there's that.
Here in Northfield.
Yeah. 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 There's that gap too. And then David was born in 1989.
Okay. Three boys mm-hmm. that went through the Northfield School District.
Yep, they did.
All right. When you were going to St. Thomas, were you living in St. Paul or were you living here?
No, I was commuting. I was living here, yeah. So in 2005 was the first year, excuse me, that was the first year I went into school administration. And my first job was to be there were plenty of school administrators here, so I had a problem, right?
Yeah.
So my first job was in Byron. Well, it was with the Zumbro Education District, SED, mm-hmm. and as coordinator of their ALC, their Alternative Learning Center. And I stayed there for a few years and it moved to Byron, much closer to Rochester, and we served all the rural districts between Rochester and Owatonna. So there were seven districts involved,
wow.
and they were all kids who had either been expelled or were having difficulties with the regular school district, and that's what I did, worked with them. It's very rewarding.
What roads did you take to go to Byron? How did you go there? Because if you keep going east and keep going south, you'll get there.
Yeah.
But
I went down... when it was in Dodge, I went down through Kenyon and picked up 56 at some point, got mm-hmm. down to Dodge. When I went to Byron, I took 52.
52, okay. Yeah. But you took 9 on the way out.
Right, right. Yeah, took 9 through Sogan Valley.
246 and then 9. Another break on the Wayne Eddy Affair at 12 minutes before it's 11 o'clock. On Kim, we are a friend you can count on.
It's a free-for-all. Stop into America's Mattress and Furniture to Go in Dundas and check out the Free For All event. Free delivery and setup, free disposal, and free financing for 1 year. Protect your new mattress with a free mattress protector. And who wants to put their dingy old sheets on a new mattress? That's why America's Mattress and Furniture to Go in Dundas is giving you a sheet set and pillows for, you guess it, free! Stop in today and check out the large selection, including Serta Mattresses and Ashley Furniture, at the America's Mattress Free For All event, located at 401 Safford Road in Dundas. Some restrictions apply.
Are you looking for spacious senior living in Northfield? Feel at home at Northfield Retirement Communities, Northwood Pines. Available for individuals and couples, this assisted living combines the privacy of one-bedroom plus den apartments with family-style meals and care available around the clock. Visit us online at northfieldretirement.org or call us today at 664-3466. Northfield Retirement Community. Innovation. Choice. Tradition.
Oh, Petunia Clark, Petula Clark.
Yeah.
Downtown.
Yes. Wow, you got two.
I got two.
Yeah.
Well, I got three. I got Sonny and Cher and the Beatles. And
yeah.
I'm waking up.
All right. Top 10 tunes, 1965, Downtown, number 9 overall. Downtown. Well, we are at 10 minutes before 11 o'clock, and I have to know, when did you meet Doug?
Oh, that's an interesting story. I actually went to high school with Doug.
High school sweethearts?
Yeah, no. We knew each other. We were, we kind of had the same friends together, but...
Was he a musician in the band?
Yeah, he was. He played saxophone, yeah.
Of course, you identify people by what they play. All right.
Doug got, isn't that something? Doug got a scholarship to Harvard. So he went to Harvard after graduation. When I went to the University of Iowa. So we didn't really connect at all until our 20th class reunion, which was the first reunion I had gone to, and there was Doug. And I'd always kind of had a crush on him in high school. He was president of our class and all that. Oh, I like him. But it wasn't to be until 20 years later.
Did the sparks fly that night at the reunion?
Yeah, they really did. They really did. It was really exciting. Well, and
did he know you had this interest?
I don't think so. I think he was. I think he was as amazed as I was. I mean, yeah. We just started talking one of the parties, and
yeah. Now he was president of the class, so that meant that was he part of putting the reunion together?
No, he wasn't. Yeah. No.
And shuffle that off to the secretary.
Shuffle that off to somebody else. Yeah.
So can you tell me, did you see him across the room, or did you walk in and he was at the table welcoming people?
Oh, dear. No, he wasn't at the table welcoming people. It was at somebody's mother's house where we all met.
Yeah.
And he was there. It was a little party for old friends, and that's where we connected and started talking. And I think we were both very surprised. Neither of us expected something like that to happen, and then we sat together at the dinner. And then he was staying with his parents. I was staying with mine, but his parents lived at Clear Lake, and so they had a boat and the lake home and everything. So he invited me over for that.
And that's
the rest is history.
And here we are after John, Nick, and David.
Yeah.
What I wondered is, did he get a scholarship because of the saxophone or because of his studies?
No, it wasn't because of his music. It was because of his studies. However, he took a degree in music composition. That's his bachelor's degree. And he's now doing well as a computer engineer, but he never went to school for it.
Yeah.
He just did it.
So, Harvard, la-ti-da.
Yeah.
And that's a big deal.
Yeah.
And what he ended up majoring in computers?
No, he majored in music composition.
Okay. But he got into the computers early? Is that what happened?
Yeah, that's the way he approaches music, too. I mean, he plays music without music. He just plays by ear, based on chords and rhythms and things mm-hmm. that he has learned. And I can't do it. I can't do it. But that kind of logical approach to it stands him well for computers as well. He does computer vision, which means he designs computers that inspect catheters or whatever it is.
You're way over
my
head. Is he still employed or is he retired? Or
He's partly retired, but he's still working. He works for himself.
Okay, and that was a wise choice to learn all about computers, which were great big machines back then.
Yeah, they were. Yeah, that's true.
So what brought you to Northfield?
Well, after that reunion, I was still living in Topeka, and he was in Boston still. And so we figured we could put our fingers on a map, and we decided we wanted to be closer to our families in Mason City. So we came up here and started looking around. Whenever we had a chance, then we were both in Iowa at the same time. And it was a true long-distance relationship for a while. And one day we were coming back from the cities. He had been trying to find a job. And he said, I'm going to take you through this town called Northfield. I think you'll like it. I went to physics camp here in high school. It's really neat. So we came in through, what's the highway? By Carlton.
19.
The 19, of course. So we came in on 19.
Beautiful.
And it's a beautiful entry, you know, by the Gothic towers and the ponds and everything. So we were just smitten, and then St. Olaf and the colleges, and we said, this is where we want to live. And it's close enough to the cities, we can, so that's what we did. We really put our finger on a map and trusted in fate. I'll tell you something.
Well, why don't you save that thought?
I will.
We'll take one final break.
Hay season is save season at John Deere. For a limited time, enjoy extra savings on select John Deere mower conditioners and round balers. Pay a visit to your local John Deere dealer to learn just how much you can save on these hard-working hay tools and get high performance at a low cost season after season. Offer ends October 26, 2018. Terms and conditions apply. See your John Deere dealer for qualifying products and complete details.
You thought you could make a midnight run to the store for a loaf of bread. What you got was a minor fender bender instead. I'm State Farm Agent Mark Quinnell in Northfield, and I know that accidents can happen anytime. That's why we give you 24-hour good neighbor service, so night or day, help is just a phone call away. For your insurance and financial needs, phone me, State Farm Agent Mark Quinnell, at 645-4545.
Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Your vehicle's engine warning light could mean something as simple as a loose gas cap or something serious and potentially expensive if you don't address it right away. Have our professional technicians at Witt Brothers Service diagnose and fix the problem as part of your overall preventative maintenance program. It could save you from costly problems down the road. Stop by Witt Brothers Service at 701 Division Street in downtown Northfield for all of your automotive maintenance and repair needs.
I don't get no satisfaction by the Stones, you bet.
Number one.
Number one
in
for
all
me
of
too.
1965. I was working in Tomo, Wisconsin when this was popular. It was a small town, locally owned radio station. The boss did not like us playing this. Our guest this morning is Barb Warnson, and Barb is the principal and the superintendent of Arcadia School over on the south side of south end of Northfield on the west side of Highway 3 behind Perkins.
Mm-hmm.
And she and Doug moved here in 1986. Mm-hmm. So what did you do to earn a living?
Well, first I wanted to tell you before we run out
of time. Oh, yeah, please.
We rented an upstairs apartment in an old house, and you were the landlord. You were the owner.
Really?
Yes. It's on 6th and Nevada. Well,
yeah.
Down, Bruce and Connie, own it now. And
Yeah.
So that's where we started out. We stayed there for a few months.
I wasn't living there at the time.
No.
No. Okay. Now I know what you mean. Okay. Yeah. That they made that duplex into a single living place.
I know, it's beautiful. They really fixed it up beautifully.
And that's
gorgeous
that,
home.
That house was on the corner of 5th and Washington, the parking lot now behind.
Yes.
And they moved it. Jim
Harrowright
bought it for $5.
Oh.
And then he moved it to the end of 6th Street on the north side of 6th Street.
Uh-huh.
And one day I was at the golf club. It was winter time, and I was chit-chatting with Jim, and he told me he had this house. It's right over there from the golf course, and we went and looked at it in a snowstorm.
Oh.
And I said, yeah, I'll take it. And all I have to do is find some money. And I talked to my friend, Jim Sawyer, who was a vice president at that time, Northwestern State Bank.
Uh-huh.
And Ron Nelson, and we worked it out. So I bought
great.
That place. How did you like it?
I liked it. I loved, and I still miss this, even though we stayed in that area. But you could stand and look over Memorial Field and see the sunrise, and it was just beautiful every morning.
Was it cold and breezy in there?
No, I don't remember that. It was during the summer.
Well, I had a Carleton. She was an archivist there, and she would complain regularly about different things. But I'm not a fixer-upper, so anyhow. But I liked the front entrance to your place. It was like ascending into the curved stairwell that we carpeted. Yeah.
Oh, have you been back? I mean,
they took me on a tour through there maybe 20 years ago. I wanted to, see what they did because it was a duplex. And that's a lot of room for one family.
Yes, it is.
And they made some nice little playrooms and all that. Yeah.
Well, I think they intended to fix it up and sell it. That's kind of what their plan was. He had done this with his father to flip other houses. And then they just couldn't bear to leave.
Yeah, and he got a good deal on it too, by the way.
Oh.
A huge basement. Did you have half a basement?
I don't think I've ever been down in the basement.
Yeah, you could build two apartments there.
Oh, my gosh.
But the city said R2 is all they can do.
Mm.
But it was built for an R4. But, that brings back some memories. Did you ever say, hey, that guy there, I used to live in the house he owned?
I think I did, because you were pretty well known. You were...
Well... You're pretty well known now with a great job. Maybe you'll have to, you should come back on a Friday, and I only do an hour on Friday.
Okay.
And we got so much to cover about from the time you got here and started popping out kids,
right.
John, Nick, and David.
Uh-huh.
And talk about what things you're involved with within the community other than your professional side.
Sure, yeah,
all right?
I would like that.
Okay, well, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Barb Warnson, my guest this morning, principal and superintendent of Arcadia School. This is the one. We are KYMN Radio out of Northfield, Minnesota. We are 1080 on your AM dial. And in addition to that, we are the one, 95.1, right?
95.1,
yeah.
The One, revolutionizes radio with a playlist that lasts for days, not minutes.
Wanna get to know you.